It was in these respects such a clean start in political organization as the world had not seen before. The absence of any binding religious tie was especially noteworthy. It had a number of forms of Christianity, its spirit was indubitably Christian, but as a state document of 1796 explicitly declared, the government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. The new community had, in fact, gone right down to the bare and stripped fundamentals of human association, and it was building up a new sort of society and a new sort of state upon those foundations. Here were about 4 million people, scattered over vast areas with very slow and difficult means of intercommunication, poor as yet, but with the potentiality of limitless wealth, setting out to do in reality on a huge scale such a feat of construction as the Athenian philosophers 22 centuries before had done in imagination and theory. This situation marks a definite stage in the release of man from precedent and usage, and a definite step forward towards the conscious and deliberate reconstruction of his circumstances to suit his needs and aims. It was a new method becoming practical in human affairs. The modern states of Europe have been involved institution by institution, slowly and planlessly out of preceding things. The United States were planned and made. In one respect, however, the creative freedom of the new nation was very seriously restricted. This new sort of community and state wasn't built upon a cleared site. It wasn't even so frankly an artificiality as some of the later Athenian colonies which went out from the mother city to plan and build brand new city-states with brand new constitutions. The 13 colonies, by the end of the war, had all of them constitutions either like that of Connecticut and Rhode Island, dating from their original charters of 1662, or, as in the case of the rest of the states, where a British governor had played a large part in the administration, remade during the conflict. But we may well consider these reconstructions as contributory essays and experiments in the general constructive effort. Upon the effort, certain ideas stood out very prominently. One is the idea of political and social equality. This idea, which we saw coming into the world as an extreme and almost incredible idea in the age between Buddha and Jesus of Nazareth, is now asserted in the later 18th century as a practical standard of human relationship. Says the fundamental statement of Virginia, all men are by nature equally free and independent. And it proceeds to rehearse their rights and to assert that all magistrates and governors are but trustees and servants of the common weal. All men are equally entitled to the free exercise of religion. The king by right, the aristocrat, the natural slave, the god-king, and the god have all vanished from this political scheme, so far as these declarations go. Most of the states produced similar preludes to government. The Declaration of Independence said that all men are born equal. It's everywhere asserted in 18th century terms that the new community is to be, to use the phraseology we've introduced in an earlier chapter, a community of will and not a community of obedience. But the thinkers of that time had a rather clumsier way of putting the thing. They imagined a sort of individual choice of and assent to citizenship that never in fact occurred, the so-called social contract. The Massachusetts preamble, for instance, asserts that the state is a voluntary association by which the whole people covenants with each citizen and each citizen with the whole people that all shall be governed by certain laws for the common good. Now, it will be evident that most of these fundamental statements are very questionable statements. Men are not born equal. They're not born free. They're born a most various multitude, enmeshed in an ancient and complex social net. nor is any man invited to sign the social contract, or failing that, to depart into solitude. These statements, literally interpreted, are so manifestly false that it's impossible to believe that the men who made them intended them to be literally interpreted. They made them in order to express certain elusive but profoundly important ideas. Ideas that after another century and a half of thinking, the world is in a better position to express. Civilization, as this outline has shown, arose as a community of obedience, and was essentially a community of obedience. But generation after generation, the spirit was abused by priests and rulers. There was a continual influx of masterful will from the forests, parklands, and steppes. The human spirit had at last rebelled altogether against the blind obediences of the common life. It was seeking, and at first it was seeking very clumsily, to achieve a new and better sort of civilization that should also be a community of will. To that end, it was necessary that every man should be treated as the sovereign of himself. His standing was to be one of fellowship and not of servility. His real use, his real importance, depended upon his individual quality. The method by which these creators of political America sought to secure this community of will was an extremely simple and crude one. They gave what was for the time and in view of American conditions a very wide franchise. Conditions varied in the different states. The widest franchise was in Pennsylvania, where every adult male taxpayer voted, but compared with Britain, all the United States were well within sight of manhood suffrage by the end of the 18th century. These makers of America also made efforts considerable for their times, but puny by modern standards, to secure a widely diffused common education. The information of the citizens as to what was going on at home and abroad, they left, apparently without any qualms or misgiving, to public meetings and the privately owned printing press. The story of the various state constitutions and of the Constitution of the United States as a whole is a very intricate one, and we can only deal with it here in the broadest way. The most noteworthy point in a modern view is the disregard of women as citizens. The American community was a simple, largely agricultural community, and most women were married. It seemed natural that they should be represented by their menfolk. But New Jersey admitted a few women to vote on a property qualification. Another point of great interest is the almost universal decision to have two governing assemblies, confirming or checking each other, on the model of the Lords and Commons of Britain. Only Pennsylvania had a single representative chamber, and that was felt to be a very dangerous and ultra-democratic state of affairs. Apart from the argument that legislation should be slow as well as sure, it's difficult to establish any necessity for this bicameral arrangement. It seems to have been a fashion with constitution planners in the 18th century rather than a reasonable imperative. The British division was an old one. The Lords, the original Parliament, was an assembly of notables, the leading men of the kingdom. The House of Commons came in as a new factor, as the elected spokesman of the burghers and the small landed men. It was a little too hastily assumed in the 18th century that the commonalty would be given to wild impulses and would need checking. Opinion was for democracy, but for democracy with powerful brakes always on, whether it was going uphill or down. About all the upper houses, there was therefore a flavour of selectness. They were elected on a more limited franchise. This idea of making an upper chamber which shall be a stronghold for the substantial man doesn't appeal to modern thinkers so strongly as it did to the men of the 18th century, but the bicameral idea in another form still has its advocates. They suggest that a community may, with advantage, consider its affairs from two points of view, through the eyes of a body elected to represent trades, industries, professions, public services, and the like, a body representing function, and through the eyes of a second body elected by localities to represent communities.